Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. You can call me Joe. You can call my guest today, Boddy, as Boddy Nodge, author of the NBL's best book, Marvelous, a great handbook on the history of the league told through the career of Adelaide 36's great Brett Maher. You can buy a copy via the link in the description. Also, via the link in the description, you can become a Patreon supporter of the show if you're a big fan. This episode is entitled Tough Questions from NBL 21 for the Hungarian Death Adder. It'll all make sense in a bit. And some of the questions that I throw at Boddy include, were the Breakers right in cutting Lamar Patterson? Does he make sense on the Bullets? Our reactions to Mitch Creek out for Southeast Melbourne on assault charges? Is Josh Giddey overrated? Is Dan Adel an NBL player? A good one? Is Andrew Bogut bad for Australian basketball and the NBL? Who's worse, Keanu Pinder or Didi Luzada? Are Melbourne United overrated? Was the cult of celebrity around Damian Martin and his defensive abilities overdone? These are the sorts of tough questions. That and more. But right now, it's Boddy Nodge. Boddy Nodge, the Hungarian Viper.
Death Adder.
Why have I got Viper here? Death Adder. Where did that name come about? Who gave it to you? And why?
Jared Daffy, who works for TAB in Brisbane and is a horse racing expert. Apparently a death adder in racing terminology is somebody that is always getting it right. You know, they're always striking it correct. And I must have got a few of my best bets for NBL games correct. And then he just basically dubbed me that when I was on that program, which I do every Wednesday morning, so with an NBL wrap up, and he said it's the Hungarian Death Adder. And I'm like, what the hell does that mean? But yeah, apparently that's what it means. So there you go.
It's got nothing to do with sort of your venom tongue in your
It's got as much to do with my venom tongue as it has to do with Hungarian salami. Very little.
All right, what are we doing now? Is a bunch of questions. I think they're right. Tough questions. Concerning okay. NBL 21, and I'm going to throw them at you one by one, and you try and answer them as best you can. The NBL Cup, question one, NBL Cup, was it a success? Any improvements in your eyes?
Yes, I think it was a great success to guarantee that you had a season, because they got a bunch of games in a short space of time. So even as we've seen recently with suddenly a bit of a COVID issue in Brisbane and in Sydney, you just never know when the season's going to go boom, grind to a halt. So if there's enough stuff in the bank already, you know, you've got, it's a bit like, think back to the grand final series last year. We had three games of the grand final series played. That was enough. That was more than half to sort of award the championship to Perth. So you need to get games in the bank. I think they did that. They succeeded in doing that with the big show. And I liked most of it. I hated all the review nonsense. I just can't stand that stuff. Mm-hmm. I think it's absolute BS, and it detracts from the game, diminishes from the flow of the game, from the momentum of the game. I see no merit in it whatsoever. And those that make the argument that, oh, it's great for the integrity of the game because if the referee gets it wrong, you know, we can get it fixed and we need that. Oh, do we? I mean, did the refs get it wrong that much, you know, that it doesn't even out over the course of a game? I mean, that's part of it. If you want the review, have it in the last 2 minutes. Okay, I'm on board with that. But for the other 38, let's play basketball.
Any improvements needed?
Well, that was it. That would be
that was it. I'll get rid of the reviews.
Yeah.
And missed opportunity to bring in like a knockout. Like I thought, because Perth won it, the ceremony was pretty average. And I thought that's because it wasn't a certainly knockout at the end. Yes, bold juice of words. There wasn't that, you know, knockout at the end. Perth Wildcats have won it. They kind of won it days before that. You know, I think if you're taking it next time, what if even like an Elam ending? I just had Nick Elam on the podcast. You didn't think there was a chance to really excite with it?
Not as long as the games are going to count towards the regular season.
Fair enough.
You know, so therefore you can't suddenly schedule in playoffs or any sort of knockout. You can't really do that because this is part of the regular season. The only way you do that is if you have an independent NBL Cup. Okay, then you can do all kinds of things, you know.
Another tier tournament, yeah.
Yeah, but this is everybody playing everybody once. So everyone's getting eight games, and it's a bit like soccer where the first team past the post is the winner. And then there's cups and other sort of competitions that, that happen in soccer. So it's a bit like that. You can't really improve that format if it's going to be in season and part of the season.
Jumping on to another question. How do you explain how do you explain the yo-yo scoreline?
Otherwise, I'm just sitting here doing nothing. The yo-yo scoreline.
Well, Perth beat some by 30. Can NBL players not back up, is my question.
Well, it's a whole new experience, isn't it? This is the NBA experience or the international experience where you've got to be able to front up often, you know, just one day off in between your next game. And so you have to be able to deal with your shortcomings or your successes. You have to have a real good perspective about them. And I think that's not just something that develops overnight. I think that's something that you takes time. The teams that you would expect could have handled it better would have been Gorge's team and Andre Lemanis' team, given that those two guys, as coaches, have handled it. Yeah, they're familiar with tournament play and a lot more comfortable with it. And so when you have the sort of erratic nature of their results, then you go, well, actually, it's not much to do with the coaching. It's how players can come up, you know, whether they're still feeling bad about the last game or feeling great about, you know, all of that is a factor. So I think that plays into it. I think the more you do things of this nature, the better it is, the better everyone will become at it, and the more it will help us at other levels, you know, at Asia Cups and those sorts of things. It'll help us in those situations. Won't make a huge difference to a World Cup or an Olympics, because largely that's going to be NBA players anyway who are already into that, really understand that sort of formula.
Let's jump on to Lamar Patterson. Is it a good move by the Breakers to get rid of him? I mean,
if you jump on,
if I can, people out there, the Brad and Body podcast, you have to jump on here. Body made a joke. Andre Lemanis, in which he said, are Brisbane going to spend $50,000 from the third place finish in the NBL Cup to cater for Lamar Patterson's return? That sort of stuff. You got to subscribe to that one. But Lamar Patterson, we're talking about a runner-up MVP who's been cut mid-season. Is he done? Is this a good move by the Breakers to get rid of him?
Yes, it is, from a Breakers point of view. He has come in out of shape. That's the reality of it. You know, when we cut away the jokes and whatever, he's coming out of shape, which means he's disrespecting the organization. He's disrespecting the competition. He's disrespecting himself. Now, does Bryce Cotton come in out of shape?
No, he doesn't.
Like, he's the best. No. And you sort of go, you just don't do that. You just don't come in out of shape unless you're coming off an injury and the club understands, all right, you're still in rehab, whatever. You know, those circumstances are different. But he's done this 2 years in a row with Brisbane. And now he did it with the Breakers. And, you know, they didn't have time to sort of run him into form. And he has been poor. And so, you know, this injury that he suffered and the chance for them to sit him and see how they go without him, frankly, it's been quite well. You know, for most, even the games they've lost lately. Very competitive. Yep. And suddenly we've got Finn Delaney and Tom Abercrombie. Finn Delaney emerging into the player that we've been wanting him to be for years, and Tom Abercrombie having a sort of a second lease of life. Got to talk about that shot. Gee, how good was that shot against Cairns? Yeah, just thrilling. So I think, yeah, they made a good move to cut him. If they can improve upon him, and apparently they are going to, I mean, or in the interim, they've got Jeremy Kendall, you know, Mr. Fix-It. I'm ready. Yeah, I'm by the phone. Just call me if you need anything. What, you need a point guard? Yeah, I run the point, yeah. What, you need a power forward? Yeah, I can grow. Anyway, Jeremy Kendall.
What's that? You need someone in the cafeteria? Yeah, I can do that too. I can do that. I've already got a hair net and a name tag.
Yeah, so in the interim they've got...
Can I work a leaf blower? I can do that.
Yes, I can walk on a tightrope with a stick in my hand. So, Jeremy.
Three-legged sack race?
This is never going to end.
Is that on my resume? Oh, sorry, let's go. Madison.
So, yes, it was a good move from their point of view.
Secondary point.
Secondary part of that story is that whether Brisbane pick him up again.
Is it a good move by Brisbane or anyone to pick him up?
I don't think so, because just looking at him on the Breakers bench over the last couple of weeks while he's been out injured, it's not as though he's been sitting in and visiting with Jenny Craig. So I think you get him back off an injury, still in not great shape, you know, and I'm thinking, well, no, you had your chance. Now, Brisbane might be prepared to gamble on him because they have seen him work his way into shape and become one of the most prominent players in the league. We know the guy can play. There's no question about that. Mm. It's whether his shape, his injury, whether this will allow him to get to that. So I think it's too big a risk. If you're going to bring somebody in, bring somebody in that's new. I mean, they did it very well with Vic Law.
Exactly. I agree with that. And I look at the MVP season that Sobey's having. They've got a better record now than they did at the same stage last year with Patterson.
Yep.
So it's a huge risk by them. And also, is it a risk they need to take? You know, couldn't they just see how this team plays out some more and then closer towards the finals or playoffs or whatever, go out and get a player who's, you know, at the peak of their form and fitness? That's what I'd be doing. But
yeah, well, but again, though, you don't really know where we'll be as a nation in terms of COVID-19 at that point where you might want to, okay, someone's got to come in, they've got to play 7 games, or I think that's what it used to be. But anyway, they've got to play X amount of games and suddenly we get a COVID outbreak. So yes, you're bringing someone in, but he's going to be in quarantine for 2 weeks and therefore he's not going to play the amount of games. Yeah, you know, so
good point.
So there's a lot of risk involved, but if you were going to replace, say, an Orlando Johnson at Brisbane, who's not set the world on fire, if you were going to replace him, I think you'd be doing it, you know, you'd be getting that process underway now, getting someone, sense. You know, on their way over, a la Brandon Paul and Ryan Brokoff and that sort of thing.
Mm. Let's jump on. Mike Kelly and Cairns. First part of this question is, how would you diagnose their problems? And when, and you've covered this league a long time, when is it acceptable, or what's your phrasing when, if you feel it's the coach, you're calling for the coach? You know what I mean?
Well, look, he's in his third year. His first year, they went for the first half pretty much till the Christmas New Year break. They hadn't won a game.
Mm, and 10 then, or 11.
Yeah, and then the New Year started and they actually started to maybe get on the same page, understand what he wanted, you know, convert to the way he wanted him to play. I mean, Aaron Fearn was there for 127 years, so his system was pretty well established, and getting some of those guys out of that into the new way that he wanted them to play. So we cut him some slack. They did pretty well towards the end of the second half of the season. They were fairly decent. Yeah. Then last year rolls around, they're great. They're really good. They take
17, 14, something like that. Yeah.
Yep. But they start poorly because again they've got some new people they've got to integrate, and then once it starts to roll, it really does start to roll. And they take Perth to 3 games in the best of 3 semis. You know, they look like, hey, amazing. Something's going to happen the following year. So naturally, you know, you're re-signing that particular group, but then we have the COVID experience, and so we've cut back to 2 imports. They've got to let DJ Newell go, and let's face it. Out of the 3, he's the one most people would have said, okay, we're cutting him. You know, you're thinking Cam Oliver.
Yeah. You're top and bottom with Machado. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, okay, it's got to be DJ. But as it turns out, you discover as this season wears on that DJ was not just a terrific influence physically and what he brought to the game as a player, which was defense and smarts, but also as a leader. There's been some lack of leadership on that floor at key times in many of the games they've lost. They've lost a lot of close games. And I think that's where they're missing DJ Newbull. So, okay, you don't necessarily know that going in, that he's going to be that important. But also I think they rolled up for the start of the season thinking there's just a natural progression. We just walk out and we just continue to be good. Mm. Well, you don't. You have to work at being good, and they stopped working at being good. They started whinging, bitching, moaning, looking at
referees.
Isn't
that on Mike Kelly though?
Well, sort ultimately of. It is. Yes, ultimately it is. He's got to pull that into line. But then he's not a rookie coach, but he's still in those early years of his coaching career where sometimes you're just not really sure how to handle this situation because you haven't been confronted with it before. Mm-hmm. So you cut him some slack. But I think at this particular point, they're sitting in last place. The imports they've got, they've signed for a couple of years. So this will be their team next year too. And if it's not going to function under him, you have to now go, okay, look, we realize that Mike is a good coach. He, you know, you don't go from being a good coach 1 year to being a bad coach next year. But this isn't working for us. So maybe you sit down and you go, all right, who's around? Oh, Rob Beveridge is around. Would they be playing better under Rob Beveridge? Yeah. Would they be playing better under Sean Dennis? Would they be playing better under Paul Henare? I would say Joey Wright as well, but Joey's indicated that he's really not interested in the NBL. So I'm leaving his name out of that. But if your answer...
Perfect Joey Wright team, by the way. Perfect.
Yes, it is. It is, absolutely. But if your answer to that question is, yes, I prefer that particular coach you mentioned over Mike Kelly or that one, well, then that's a decision the club's got to make.
Mm. I mean, I hear that DJ Newble stuff, but I think that roster's that is not the last place roster. They have a roster good enough. I mean, they have two of the best imports, still probably the second best import duo in the NBL behind Cotton and Mooney. I mean, Melbourne don't even have a second. New Zealand have had troubles. Brisbane have had troubles with one of theirs, Johnson. So they've still got the two best imports in the league. I think that, and you know, you look at their players 4 through 7. I mean, the Wildcats are putting out a DP as a starter. Yeah. People would say, oh, there's not the local talent to cover up that Cairns team. I say there's a problem. There's nothing wrong with Fabian Krizlovic compared to a Luke Travers, no offense to him, but Nartai, Kuatnoi, Jared, these are good enough players to get you a winning record. I think it's been really poor.
Yeah, I think that thing has disintegrated. I don't know whether Mike has lost them, but lost the players, but it does appear that way. Mm. And then, you know, the sort of luck they're having doesn't help, you know, that when Abercrombie hits that incredible shot to beat them at the buzzer.
Billy Zane, like, Titanic. Yeah. Real man makes his own luck.
Okay, but it's another dagger to the heart, you know.
I understand.
I don't think that situation is workable anymore. At the end of this season, I think they must look at parting ways, which is a shame for Mike because I think he's a very good coach. I think he's going to be an even better coach, and he's just hit that bump in the road that obviously he's not handling well because the results are reflecting it.
Well, the other option you can make is you cut one of the imports and you bring back DJ Newble. He's just finished up in Japan. He's available. Do you think – does that bad performance show say anything about – sort of the unnecessary nature of bigs in the NBL, like where you look at Cam Oliver. I mean, I still think Machado is really good. Cam Oliver, I'm sort of making up my mind. Would they have been better off, even at this stage? Would you go, oh, let's bring back DJ Newble then? If he's the big difference, let's bring him back.
Yeah, well, I don't know that they can salvage this season, to be honest. But if that was a strategy, then you look at the other bigs they have, Krizlovic, Natai, and Jawai, who's really fallen out of favour, even though when he has had some opportunities, he hasn't always been great, but he was pretty good in that game they won.
Massacred.
He was right into it. So whether he's fallen out of favour or, you know, you would look at Cam Oliver, is that he might make the most spectacular dunk going around in the league at the minute.
Oh,
but
sure.
Other than that, I really question his work ethic at times.
And his, fair
and point. His attitude. His attitude. Mm. You know, it's like,
you know, he looks deflated this year.
But there's a sense of entitlement with some of those guys now. It's like, hey, come on, man. We put the record on the board last year. Cut us some slack, man. You know, it's like, no, that's not how it works. It just isn't how it works. You don't get an inflated head. You know, what you do is you just go out there and do the hard work and play D and help out and make the next pass for a good shot to go to a great shot. They're not doing those things consistently, and they were last year. They were so much fun to watch, and they were having such a good time. Do they look like they're having a good time?
No, hell, they're not having fun at all. Not having fun at all.
No.
Jumping on. Josh Giddey, overrated?
Yes. I'm sorry. He is. He is terrific. And for an 18-year-old, he is phenomenal. But I remember we've had phenomenal 18-year-olds before. There's one called Andrew Gaze that wasn't too bad when he broke in and averaged 30 or whatever. You know, so I think we're in too much of a hurry to stamp him a superstar and not letting him arrive there, you know, naturally. And I think there's so much pressure on him. He's probably doing a very good job of handling the pressure because everyone has this expectation that he's going to go in the draft and he's going to be the first Aussie that's sort of hasn't come via the college route and blah, blah, blah. There's all those sort of positives and pressures on him. The kid's a very, very talented young man. I'm not disputing that. But I think the way some of the commentators talk about him and blow smoke up his butt, you know, it's calm down. Mm. He's doing his best. And and he has some very, very good games. And then every now and then he has an 18-year-old's game.
Yeah, right. I agree with that.
I'm relieved because I thought we were going to have a very vicious argument then.
No, well,
I was bracing.
One thing I'll say with Giddy, I haven't liked the, you know, Adelaide 4x15, but look at Giddy's stat line. It's like, I don't know if that's the conversation you want around the league where, you know, you're highlighting stat lines in big losses. But no,
how good is Adelaide's best as a team at the minute without Isaac Humphries? Is pretty damn good. If you can get them down by 26,
how do you lose that game?
This team, we're going to win this by 50. It's like,
I've got more Adelaide questions down the line. You'll like it. Do the Sydney Kings play the least attractive brand of basketball in the NBL this season?
Currently, yeah, I think you'd have to say so. But. They don't have all the pieces though, So you sort of they're getting results or trying to get results as best they can, and sometimes that isn't pretty. But what I do like about them is that for the most part they've got a lot of heart, and they play with a lot of desire and intensity. And for a rookie coach in Adam Ford, I think he's done a very good job of keeping them competitive, considering the sort of injuries and circumstances that his team has experienced. He has not at any time had his best team available at any point.
Is Adam Ford a Trevor Gleeson plagiarism?
Oh, look, you can say that about any coach that's been in a system. Is Dean Vickerman, an Andre Lamanis plagiarism? No, I don't think so. I think he's his own man. You can't be somebody that you're not. You've got to be your own man.
The Next Stars program. RJ Hampton, Terry Armstrong, now Mojave King. Is the NBL Next Stars program a one-way street in favor of the league? Is it flawed?
I think it's flawed because the rules seem to change. Because on the basis of Didi Luzada, the basis under which he's playing, well, James Ennis a couple of years ago at Perth should have been playing under that same, if we had the Next Star system, but no, he was an import, whereas Didi Luzada is not an import, even though he's already been drafted. So originally it was that the kids that come out of high school that don't want to do a year of college, that want to do a year of pro basketball, that's who the Next Stars program is catering for. And then that starts to get twisted and bent, and now we got a little bit of here, and this guy can play, and that guy. I think it needs to be really clear that it's for those players that are taking a year off from the end of their high school careers to the beginning of their NBA careers and coming here to play in a professional men's league. It's not for those people that have already been drafted and then are going to be tucked away somewhere. Well, that's an import. That's an import.
I think
so I don't like that inconsistency.
I think I think the Next Stars program works for players like LaMelo Ball and Giddy, who have a huge engine behind them. And then it works quite well for the clubs who get players like Justine and Jessup. But then there's this wacky guys in the middle, didn't do anything for RJ Hampton, did nothing for Terry Armstrong and Mojave King. I mean, he would be really reassessing that decision to pursue the program and pursue especially with it with Cairns.
I think he's been unlucky because they've been going so poorly. I think a couple of times when he's been put into games, he's tried too hard to make an immediate impact. And he's just done some silly things in trying to do the right thing. No one does crazy stuff on a court intentionally, but unless your name's Dennis Rodman, when he has come on a few times, he's sort of tried too hard. He's screwed up and he's been sort of, the hooks come out very quickly. There's been a great deal of impatience with him. And I think that's hurt him. I think Cairns' performance this year has hurt him. Put him into that Cairns team of last season and the way they were traveling, I think he'd be seeing a lot more time. Mm. When Kratnoy got hurt last year. Like, that would have been a golden opportunity for him in that sort of scenario to come in and play a lot of minutes and be a big contributor in a team that's going well and is happy and is feeling good. And that's the team that he saw. That's the team that
he signed on with. Yeah, right.
Right. But that's not the team that he's playing for. And because the more games they lose, you know, one of two things happen. While they're losing games, you don't take risks on guys that you don't fully trust. Or at some point you go, well, stuff it. We're gone. I might as well play these guys. And that's he's had a bit more time in the last little while. So hopefully that's changes for him. But yeah, I think the Nick Star system is flawed because it's gone from what was pretty much black and white with Terrence Ferguson to a couple of shades of grey.
South East Melbourne, one of the more inconsistent teams in the league. They win, lose, win big, lose big. Are they inconsistent? Do you think they are, first of all, yes or no? And is Simon Mitchell the cause of them? That inconsistency, if they have it.
Well, you just described their season: win, lose big, win big. That does sound inconsistent. It did sound like it was pretty inconsistent the way you went through it.
No win streaks. I don't think they've won two games in a row. They may have just.
Well, yes, they have. They've won three in a row. And in the last round of the cup.
Prior to that,
I picked that because the previous week they'd lost by a point to Perth. And that was, in Kyle Adnams' career high game, and I think they were probably mistaken in going to him for the winner. I know he was having a big game, but he was at the end of that big game, and he'd done a lot. And you ask him now, can you produce a winner for us? How about you just go to Mitch for a winner, or one of your more established guys in that instance? They couldn't get up again in time to beat Sydney, and they lost that by 6 points. So I don't think they were humiliated or very inconsistent or anything in that particular round. And then I looked at this round, and I expected that they would win all three games. Now, I prefaced that by saying when I thought they would beat United, I'd made that prediction without knowing that Kendall Stevens was going to also be out, joining Adam Gibson, Dane Pinot and Kiefer Sykes on the sideline, and that Ryan Brokoff wasn't going to play. So, I mean, that's a potential starting lineup right there that isn't playing, and I might have thought differently about it, but they just came out and played with such conviction and certainty kids like Liafa coming off the bench, who's the fourth choice point guard behind Sykes, Adnam, and Gibson. Fourth choice, and he's coming out there and he's getting double figure points and taking bold shots. You know, playing the way you want young people to play. Come in and grab a piece of that game. Now, I think that three wins was the beginning of a streak. Now that's their best streak ever since they started in the league. They won their first three games, and so now they're rolling. But now we've got this situation that Mitch Creek finds himself in, and you got to go, well, to what degree is that going to disrupt them? Because he's been the heart and soul of that team.
Oh yeah. So do you see him in the finals now?
Well, here's the thing: how far away is Sykes? How far away is Gibson? How far away is Pinot? Because Ryan Brokoff can be that Mitch Creek guy.
Yeah, I agree.
He's been in the NBA. Mitch never quite did that. You know, Mitch got there for a couple of 10-day contracts. Ryan's had contract. He's been there. He's done Europe. He's an established player. He can replace Mitch. I mean, it's not as good as having both of them, obviously, but I don't rule them out, depending on how long the other guys are still in limbo. I mean, obviously.
I think they're a little lean up front, and he would really help them a lot. More so Gibson, yes, but he kind of confuses the backcourt if you have Sykes and Adnam. So Pinot's the one for me where I'd be getting out the horse tranquilizer and plugging in full of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Nothing to do with the injury. Just see what happens.
Who knows? Maybe he wins the Melbourne Cup for him. Okay, on we go.
On we go. Your reaction to the Mitch Creek news in a word?
Oh, it's just sad.
Yep, sad. Let's move on. Deng Adel. Is Deng Adel, and just go yes or no on these. I've got three dot points. Is Deng Adel capable of being, firstly, an NBA player?
No.
A boomer?
No.
A good NBL player?
Yes.
Why do you say that?
Because I think he's got enough tools, and he's shown in glimpses and in patches that he is up to the level of this competition. But he's not higher than this competition. And to go international, to go NBA, you have to be better than the competition. This, you have to be Bryce Cotton. You have to be those Chris Goulding. You have to be Jock Landau, and he's not that. But he can get to the sort of consistency level of guys that have played for Australia, like Cam Glidden and you know, people of that ilk. Mm-hmm. He can certainly get there, but I don't think he can get far beyond that.
What's been the swindle? How did he get in the NBA and the Boomers? Because I just see this huge chasm between him and that level.
I don't know. Sometimes you can be fortuitous. Sometimes you can be in the right place at the right time. Mm. Look at Stephen Adams. He played one season of college basketball. He was raw. He didn't look like he was going to be much. And he's having a very, very solid NBA career. Just got into the right, the right people picked him up. They worked with him. And now he's who he is. He's a real quality NBA center. Mm. But you may not have predicted that if you'd seen him playing basketball in New Zealand a decade ago.
Speaking of a New Zealand big man, let's go to an Australian big man. Andrew Bogut, been very vocal on Twitter about decals and stuff, always with that usual sort of dry sarcasticness. My question to you, buddy, is he, two-part question, is he bad for Australian basketball? Is he bad for the NBL? Let's go Australian basketball as a whole. What do you think?
No, he's good for Australian basketball. No, okay. He's good. He because there's an old saying in the industry that I left, and that is, good news, bad news, it's all news. Mm-hmm. So he keeps the sport in the public eye. For better or for worse, he makes people talk, whether they're saying, gee, I love what Bogut wrote, or geez, he's a knucklehead. It doesn't matter. They're reacting. It's like wrestling. You're wrestling, you have to have good guys and bad guys so that the crowd reacts. What you are after is the crowd reaction. So I don't think he's bad for Australian basketball. I think what he's done as a player in the past, his record's on the board. So no. Second part of your question, is he bad for the NBL? I think the NBL thinks so because he won't be muzzled, as he's said himself. But they have now changed their position on the decals. And I really believe if Andrew had not been so vocal and consistent and on their case all the time in social media about the dangers that those slippery decals were presenting, that nothing would have happened. I think I don't think anything would have happened. I mean, I could be wrong. I could be underselling the NBL's desire to look after players' well-being, but he kept that pressure on constantly. So I think he's good for the NBL because they did make the right move. Now we're going to go back to the previous sort of decals, which are safer than the ones that FIBA have approved. So I don't know what FIBA's thinking, but I don't think the NBL thinks he's. I think they just wish he'd be quiet and leave them alone. And please let us be. We're doing good things. Please,
Do you think?
He's bum like everybody else.
If you think you were, say, an NRL fan who's never really heard of the NBL, and your first introduction to the NBL exclusively is Bogut, do you think you'd be like, oh, I'm going to test out this product to see how shitty the decals are, how bad this is, bad.
That's a fair point.
You know what I mean? Like, that's my one issue with him, because I totally agree with he keeps it in the headlines. I mean, he bought some house recently that made the Age, so that's amazing, his gravity in that way. But I do worry that people who are new to the sport, not even people who've got an axe to grind with the sport, but people totally new to it would think, what's this knock-up league? They can't even get the court right. Not going to bother. That's my worry.
Yeah, that's a fair point. That is a fair point. So maybe the NBL has some reason to be narky with him, but I think generally, I think Andrew's intentions are usually good. He's using his powers for good, not evil. But I don't know if he's always prudent. If there might be a moment where here and there where he could just take a step back and go, I'll leave that alone.
I think my one criticism of his thinking is he often refers to, well, the NBL is going to be like the NBA. And I'd say that straight away is a fatal flaw. The USA is a country of 330 million. Australia's got 25. What works in the NBA is not going to work in the NBL.
No.
The NBA and the USA may as well be the planet Mars. It's a totally different. It's a first-tier sport over there, second-tier, well, third or fourth tier, perhaps. League over here, a team of it, not going to work. But that's my one criticism of his thought process. But let's jump on. Who's been given more to them that they don't deserve, Keanu Pinder or Didi Luzada?
Oh, gee, that's a coin toss because...
Oh, I think it's Pinder. He is starting. But sorry.
He's starting. That's right. You're right. He's starting and basically Adelaide plays, you know, opens the game with four players and Keanu, who really, I'm trying to think what he does well, but he gets up and down the court.
Is Obi Chea with more fouls and less offensive, if that's...
Yeah, and it amazes me now that the commentators are sort of, he's blocked a shot. You know, they go bunter if he does anything. It's like, that's what he's there for, because everyone's trying to work out what he's there for. And basically he's there to keep Jack McVay seated, because I don't think he brings anything that McVay doesn't improve upon. Nothing. You know, you can say, McVay's not as good a defender. Well, Keanu can't. He couldn't guard an elephant in a phone box. It's really, you just pass the ball into the big guy and he just turns and he's too small to play the position they got him playing. So they just shoot over the top of him. He's not quite skilled enough to play in the small forward position. So I'm just not across what the excitement about him is. With Didi Luzada, I think Didi Luzada is extremely overrated now. I liked him last year.
I pulled the pin, B time.
Yeah, I just don't think he's doing anything of note. And sometimes if I'm sort of half watching a game and I'm kind of keen for Sydney to win it and I'm on their side and he comes on, I kind of cringe and go, oh, geez, what are we going to get sort of thing. Mm. And that's not what you want about a guy that's potentially going to the NBA. I don't see him in the NBA. No. I see him in the NAB, maybe, you know, making a withdrawal from his bank account, but that's as close as he's going to be.
Small deposits. I think... Didi with him. So what the other problem with Didi is, probably with both of them really, Keanu Pinder's playing over McVay and Didi Luzada in the fourth quarter's playing over DJ Vasiljevic sometimes. Maddening. Yeah. Absolutely maddening. And I don't know if it's surviving on reputation or some kind of, hey, there's an NBA guy you got here. Like we made a deal with your former administration that he'd play in the fourth quarter. Because I just see no merit in that at all. And you talk about NBA. I mean, the NBA is an 82-game schedule. Didi's missed more games than he's played in the NBL. You know,
yes, that's the other thing.
Third the games.
His body is he's shown that his body doesn't have the resilience. But, you know, let's face it, though, if he made an NBA roster, it's not like he'd be playing.
Yeah, good point. He'd be way down the end. Yeah. Here we go. One of your favorite topics. Are there too many members of the NBL commentary team? There are currently 21, including the sideline reporters.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, especially in that hub situation, really, you just needed. I mean, the best combination was Jack Heverin, Andrew Gaze, Leonard Copeland. That was the best combination.
That was the most. I think that was the best combination for that blowout game. I think you'd substitute Leonard with John Casey. I think the NBL's coming around to John. I mean, I don't know why it took him so long.
No. Well, John's the anchor man. That would be the Jack Heverin role.
Or then you'd keep the other two.
Yeah, but I'm just saying out of the combinations that I've heard, that combination was the one that I enjoyed the most.
I think that blowout loss was the best situation for those three, in particular Leonard and Andrew, because the game was obsolete, unimportant, so they could go off on their own tangent. But yeah, I see what you're saying.
But they did two games. You must have missed the other one. The other one was a tougher game. Yeah, because they were doing, you know, these were double headers, so you get the same team for the double head. So, and they were very good in that too. So, the fact that they could handle a blowout game and make it entertaining was a big tick in the box. That's not like, well, that's all.
That's not easy.
And they did the other one very well too. So, I'm disappointed that's all we've heard of them is that one doubleheader, because that was the banter and the repartee between Andrew and Leonard was that of two guys that have been to war together, who have utmost respect and love for each other and know the other one's soft spots and weak spots and how to get them going. So it was just beautiful. We see a lot of this faux camaraderie where they're, wasn't that the day you got 61? Yeah, oh, no. All that sort of crap that goes on that where they pretend that they
didn't
have
feel it was too chummy? You didn't feel it was too chummy?
No. I really, too nostalgic. Really liked it.
Okay.
I liked it, but I tell you what, I think we don't get it right in the people that we have on the commentary. A lot of the people we have on the commentary think that it's radio. So, like, you know, there's a couple of, oh, they just won't shut up. They just won't shut up. It's like every single player's got to be explained, and it's so essential. You've got to understand that he had his foot out of court. Do you know what that means? God damn it. Let me explain it to you. Oh, shut up. You know, just mute. You know, and so we've got radio-style commentators who just will not shut up. And what we don't have is coaches. Now, you look at the NBA coverage, you've got Hubie Brown. One of the greatest coaches of all time.
Mike Fratello.
You got Fratello. You got JVG.
Doc Rivers did it for a while. PJ Calissimo did it for a while. Your coaches,
okay, yeah. So you've got to coach because with all due respect to even our finest players, unless you've coached, you don't really know as much about the game because what you do as a player is you roll up to training and you do whatever the coach has got on his training
physically
schedule.
You're not articulating the thought of the game, right.
You're going to a film session, you're listening to what the coach is telling you about this, that, and the other, and how we're going to do this, that, and the other to counter that, or, you know, everything is coming from the coach. They're the ones that are the true analysts. And that, and all a player's got to do, and I'm not trying to say that players are dumb or anything, but all they got to do is just show up, go to work and get told what to do, and they do it. Mm. And they bring their own flair and their own brilliance to it. But thought process, right, does this particular player know that if he's guarding Bryce Cotton, he's got to force him to his left? Or do they know that, or does the coach tell him that? So that's the guy that you really want an analyst like that on the program. Now, there's some good ones out there. I mean, I know Chris Anstey's career is more noted for his playing than his coaching.
He's terrific. But in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Sums up.
Yeah, I think they don't use him, and they don't use a guy like Mark Worthington.
Again, he's in Perth, a bit difficult with the hub. But, yeah, again, those two were amazing.
Yeah, and again, they would have a good rapport as a coach.
Oh, they did, yeah. Player combination. They did one game, and they were great.
Yeah, but just sort of there's a reluctance by the NBA to take chances on those people that they think might say something we don't want to hear.
Well, I think the other thing is Bill Woods was on this podcast a little while ago, and I think he put it best. Too many people because you got to slim it down. So you get the voice of basketball. Right now, who's the voice of basketball? Could be any one of these 21 people, 22 with Leonard. That you need to go, oh, I hear John Casey's voice. It must be the NBLs on telly. You need to build that sense of place, sense of home. And by trimming the commentary team, I think that's in the same way that a great cartoon character is recognizable in silhouette, a sport should be recognizable without your eyes and by your ears. And I think they need to pick their three or four or five guys, whoever they are, maybe have that color guy change a bit, but you need to have one person who's there all the time. And Andrew Gaze is probably the guy who's most there, but again, he missed some games. And I think you need to have two guys who are always there. And the third guy is pretty much there three quarters of the time and changes on special occasions. That's what I think needs to be done.
So you're saying you want it to be John Casey, Andrew Gaze, and then whoever. Yeah, and I'm inclined to agree. The thing I've liked about Andrew Gaze's commentary is that since he's had his coaching stint, I think he just sees the game slightly differently than he used to, and now he is actually prepared to say things. Yeah, that's a bad call. You know, like words like that out of his mouth 5 years ago, they just wouldn't have happened.
He was too sweet. Give you toothache.
Yeah. Good enough. Whereas now he's quite prepared to say what he sees. And not only that, but he says it in a colourful, often delightful, very new, and it's all natural. He hasn't got it written down on a piece of paper like some of the footy commentators waiting for their chance to say.
His commentary is crunchy. It's like the top of the apple crumble. Like it's just really, you just can really chew on it. I like what you say. Wow. Do you like that?
Wow. I do like that. There's your grab. There's your grab.
Let's go. Melbourne United. Overrated or arrogant?
Probably more overrated than arrogant.
Why do you say overrated? I mean, this is a team that one of their players did declare they were going to go undefeated. But you go with overrated rather than arrogant.
Yeah, because he was looking at his talent. He wasn't saying we're the best team in the league and everybody else is crap. He was saying, when I look at who I have around me and who I'm playing with, I don't think anybody can beat us.
And I think he also phrased it like there's no reason we couldn't go undefeated. I have to go back on that. Yeah. But I don't think it was like – it wasn't the Babe Ruth calling the shot. It was more like, we got the talent to go undefeated. It was more than that.
Yeah, it wasn't Larry Bird. It wasn't wasn't Ken Cole. It wasn't anything like that. It was reasoned, and now they're 10-4. So I think if there was any degree of not arrogance, it's just overconfidence, I think they're back to the field. But also, here's another team that if you ask yourself, how many games so far this season have they had everybody healthy and on the court at the same time?
Maybe two. Maybe.
Okay. So once again, they're going to have their little bumps in the road, because when they do get everybody back and healthy, then, you know, where does Udeh Baba fit in now that Chris Gordon's there? You know, the Hobson, the Hat Shaley, where, you know, like they, you've got to all sort of get that back to, you know, as Andre Lemanis was saying on the Bread and Body podcast, you know, it takes a little while to work out who works well with who and what the combination should be. And so they still got to go through that. And that will be, there'll be a couple of losses in that. And there'll be people, you know, throwing their petticoats up in the air going, ooh, we're falling apart, sack Dean Vickerman. It's like, just relax, you know, give them a chance. You know, don't overreact all the time. There's massive overreaction to their last loss. And it's like, well, okay, Udeh Baba got yanked. You know, we got pulled out of the team right on the eve of the game, and they already got down Hobson and Jack White. And Jack White has been fantastic for them.
Unreal. In a spot that they need. I mean, Dave Barlow.
Maybe
1 year too many, but Jack White was that spot. He was that guy. And of all the players to go, like Hobson can kind of be filled in by Golding. McCarron, if he got hurt, could have been filled in by Illy. That was the one spot where they really needed Jack White, and he went down.
Yeah. So, you know, I think if you're talking about, oh, you know, this team expected to go through undefeated, then that's arrogance. If they have now come back to the field, I think there was a degree of overconfidence, but that was based on everybody being available.
Right. The overrated, we are using overrated. I mean, when Jock Landale signed with this team, people were just like, yep, hands up, it's over. They can't be beat. Look at the depth. They can't be beat. I was shocked. I was like, hang on, Bryce Cotton's perennial MVP. No one can beat this guy, unless you're Joe Wright and Adelaide a couple of years ago. No one can beat this guy. What are we all talking about? I thought it was crazy. So you.
But also at that time, you were one of.
Do you look at the roster and go, oh, sorry. Are you going to give me?
I was going to say, you were one of the few people at that time when people were getting all excited about Jock Landale that said many times, John Mooney's actually pretty good. Everyone else on the Eastern Seaboard was saying, oh, they got themselves, you know.
The hitching, the jumper doesn't look good. I thought, he will stat with rebounds. I guarantee you he'll go 15 a night.
Yeah.
It happened, but anyway. Play one game at Notre Dame and you'd see, oh, holy shit, this guy shifts people like Dane Pinot is the comp I had. I was like, this guy, he's not athletic. He shifts them like Dane Pinot. And that guy grabbed 12 rebounds last year and he's better than that.
Yeah. Anyway. So I think that was a massive overreaction that one player is going to change. Or, you know, put your glasses down, it's all over. It's like, hang on a second. Let's have a look at Mooney. Let's just, because I think the only thing that, the only area where Perth didn't get better was in replacing Nick Kay. You can't replace Nick Kay. But Mooney's much better than Plumlee. I mean, Trevor Gleeson can play Mooney down the stretch of games. He couldn't. He used to sit Plumlee down. Yeah. So, and Todd Blanchfield is every bit as...
He's playing the best basketball in his career the last three, 4 years.
Right. Tirico White, he's given them more value than Tirico White. So I think they're in pretty good shape except for that one spot. But now, you know, Bryce, every day brings Bryce Cotton closer to becoming a fire-eating, Vegemite-loving Aussie. And the second that happens, they can bring in someone in that fourth spot.
Let's talk about that his citizenship in relation to Melbourne United. I mean, Perth Wildcats are as big a club as Melbourne, and they're now going to naturalise an import. Not the first time they've done this little caper, the Perth Wildcats. I can't remember the last Melbourne Tiger or United import who got naturalised. It's probably Leonard Copeland.
Well, yeah, I was going to say Leonard, yeah.
That's what, 20 years ago? No, 30 years, 25 years ago? Like, why is this team?
It'd be in the 90s, yeah.
And this is the question I have for you. Like, do they have an anti-import culture? Do they foolishly prioritize their local talent over the import talent that routinely dominates and defines the NBL? You would have thought a club Well, you would have thought a club like Melbourne United would have as many naturalised great imports as Perth. Perth seemed to go, James Crawford, we're not going to let you go. Ricky Grace, we're not going to let you go. Bryce Cotton, we're not going to let you go. Is James Crawford, did he naturalise? I think so.
Yeah, I think he did. Yeah, he did.
But they're like, we're going to make sure this works for us. We love you. You love us. We're going to make it work. Melbourne United, the last 3 years, they've turned over their imports like crazy. Well, what do you think?
It's an oddity because historically, American basketball has gravitated most into Melbourne, and that's where all the great American basketball players were. You know, you had a few good ones outside. Now I'm talking even before the NBL. Like that was the place. Melbourne was Mecca for basketballers, and that's where the Americans gravitated. You know, like Bill Palmer, one of the best of all time. He didn't know that. He thought that, well, I'm going to go and play in Canberra because that's the capital of Australia, so that's where the basketball must be best. Well, oops. one year there, it's Melbourne. I'm heading to Melbourne. So, you know, that and Ken Richardson, who was the inaugural MVP of the league, one of the best players I've ever seen, he was recruited to Adelaide. He played here for 2 years and was like, no, I've got to go to play in Melbourne now, sorry. And then he went and dominated in Melbourne for 2 years among all these teams that were stacked with Americans. And at that stage, there was no import restriction, so you didn't need to naturalise. But once that came in, then you know, players were naturalising. So it's an oddity to me that Melbourne and, well, to a lesser extent, South East Melbourne, they've only been here 5 minutes, but like that they haven't found those sorts of imports that, A, want to stay and therefore can get the citizenship part of it through because they didn't just come in for a year or like a Sean Long or a Melo Trimble here for a year or 2 years and gone. But, you know, that they haven't been able to find that sort of guy that will settle here and then that you can then naturalise after a few years. That surprises me that hasn't been part of their philosophy or their thinking.
Well, I look at the last 3 years. They make the grand final with Casper Ware, DJ Kennedy, Josh Boone. They totally turn the soil on all three of those. Casper is one they probably wanted to keep, but they're only too happy to kind of go in another direction. Then obviously Sean Long and Trimble and Stanton Kidd they get rid of. And then this year they haven't been able to get Hobson off. I mean, Hobson is a really good player. He's their second best player behind Landau, maybe their best. And he's playing poorly. He's injured now, but even before that, he wasn't playing great. Why? I just think there's this import barrier. Why can't they get these imports firing? Do you have any explanation?
I do not know because I at the start of this season, looking at the Sean Long experience, how he was the major guy at the Breakers the previous year and played great, which is why Melbourne went after him. And then and same with Melo Trimble was the major player at Cairns, so he stood out. That's why they went after him. And then in the Melbourne environment, they struggled
and sour on the league, and they're gone. They couldn't wait to sign somewhere else.
Yeah, and so now you've got a similar scenario with Scotty Hobson where he's been the main man on that Breakers team, and so they brought him in. He's not the main man here, so he's got to find where he fits. You know, Chris Golding is the main man.
Sorry,
I was going to say, then they bring in Jock Landau as well, and so, like, who's the main guy there? So, I don't know. They really, the next guy that should naturalise should be Casper Ware. He's been around long enough.
Think so.
Naturalised. Yeah, and him playing as an Australian for Sydney and then able to bring in someone else alongside Jarrell Martin. And we're basing this on the fact that we're still staying with two imports, which is what it was for a long time, and then we went to the three. But if we were to go back to three and you had Casper as well, boy.
You're stuck in the deck. Yeah. I don't know why every team isn't going, even if our import isn't, you know, Bryce Cotton, we're going to naturalise
Say he's Jeremy Kendall.
Okay, now you've done it. Next question. What one word would you use to describe the NBL's handling of the decal issue in light of the change they've made?
One word to describe.
You can have two if you want to go with not bad.
I thought they were feeble in the way they handled it. For a lot of it, they were just feeble. They didn't want to address it. They wanted it to go away. Just be quiet, go away.
Or did they just want to handle it behind closed doors, buddy?
Well, it was going on and on for a long time, and they came out with a statement. They came out with a statement early in the piece when the first crap started to hit the fan. They said they put a statement out saying that these are FIBA approved. This is they meet the requirements. Everybody bugger off. Basically, that's what their first statement was.
I had that line where it said you know, we respect the players. Safety's paramount, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I think what really got their dander up was when Didi Lazada said, like, this league doesn't care about its players. That was off colour. I thought that was...
Yeah.
And that got the NBL's back up. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, and then the NBL store putting out that particularly hilarious. Let me say,
devilishly hilarious. Post.
Very funny. Which then the NBL said was in bad taste. No, it wasn't. It left a bad taste.
You think it left a bad taste? If you were paying their cash, paying their paycheck, and they stab you in the back with that one, you wouldn't expect to be shit canned. Come on,
I just thought it was hilarious. I didn't think it was in bad taste. I just thought that they took it that way because they were trying to have this whole issue quietened down.
I thought if you're the players, you'd be more upset in the league because you're trivializing the slips and the falls and the danger at present. I don't know.
No, I was very disappointed with whatever it's called now, the NBL Players Association, whatever it's got. It's got a new name, Basketball Australia, whatever it is. I just thought they were pretty pathetic and quiet and not, they weren't on the front foot. They didn't really want to take the NBL on that. And I think if your responsibility is to look after player welfare, then, geez, guys are complaining left, right, and centre about the decals. You know, Anthony Drimmick posted something about, you know, the best defence you can plan out is to just channel the guy toward a decal. You know, yeah, come on. You've got to face up to these issues and do something. And I thought the Players Association was very, very weak. Mm. And I'm disappointed because in the past they've been quite strident about monies and whatever.
Andrew Bogut is a delegate, and I think there might be a push to make him the head of that, just quietly. If that happened, that wouldn't totally surprise me. And that would be, I don't know how that would go, but I tell you what, if you want someone who's going to aggressively protect and campaign for players' rights, I'd be looking at Andrew Bogut. I really would.
Yeah. But I actually think that the president of the Players Association should be an active player. Like previously it was Matt Campbell when he was playing, and then it was Jacob Holmes. Now I think it is still Jacob Holmes, but he's, you know, every year that you're removed from it, you become a little bit older, slower, and your memories of yourself are greater. That's what tends to happen. Yeah, and I think if you're actively out there and you slip on a decal, and you're the president, you're saying, you know, we've got to do something about this. Whereas you're sitting in the stands, you know, eating prawns and drinking champagne, going, isn't this a lovely game? You know, you may not have the same interests at heart of the players that you once did.
Coming to the end here, I've just got one here. Was the cult of personality around Damian Martin in Perth, his performance in NBL 20 and departure overstated? Was it all too emotive? Did we all buy into the psychology of basketball rather than the nature of good moves? He's left. He's their champion and he's captain and he's left and they're just as good, you know?
No, you see, I think a lot of people thought that Damian's disappearance into retirement would that team would fall apart because he was so much a part of the culture. But there is a culture. And it exists beyond Damian. And he was injured for great portions of the last season. A lot of games. Yeah. And so they actually already started to experience life without Damo. So that their transition as a team to life without Damian Martin wasn't as stark and as difficult as prevalent in how they played as a lot of people were expecting or predicting. And I think they talk about Wildcats basketball all the time, you know, to the point where it just gives you the shit.
It's obnoxious, yeah.
But realistically, it exists. They have a way of playing. They have a way of competing. They have a standard that they set their players, and they meet that. And Damian was at the forefront of that. But that doesn't mean that Sean Redditch wasn't, or that Ricky Grace wasn't, or that Andrew Vlahov wasn't. These are all great players that have been and gone and still – Perth is there. Mm. So it the culture stays. And it was a culture that was introduced by who knows who, but it's been there for a long time. And when Bevo went over there and took all these guys from West Sydney with him, you know, the Matt Knights and the Damian Martins and all those sort of guys that he took over there, that was really where we start to see their more consistent winning of championships. I mean, they've won 10, but they've won 5 in Trevor Gleeson's period. So we're talking, they've won a lot more championships in this cluster of this century than they did from 82 to 2000.
Does coincide with Cotton. You know, they play Cotton basketball rather than Wildcat basketball. But I compare it to this. I think the Wildcats is the tree and the players are the fruit. And what the Wildcats do more so than, we were just talking about Melbourne and how they don't mature imports. They let players hang on the vine. They go through their plump, beautiful phase, and then they also let them go into their decay phase. They go through the whole range of emotion with the player, and then they drop off and a new one comes through. They allow that process to happen. The other teams, it's always just they grab before fruits even become ripe. Oh, is it good? No, it's not good. Eat it, throw it away. The Wildcats let it hang on the tree a little bit. That would be my metaphor.
And you spent some time thinking about that too. And that's unfair. There's a fruit tree out the window. That's unfair, listeners.
There's a fruit tree. All right, let's get right to the end here. is Mitch McCarron the starting point guard on an NBL championship team?
Yeah.
You confident?
Okay, I'm sorry you didn't like the answer, but yes.
Yeah, sorry.
And right now you could say, is Nathan Sobey? And if you'd asked me this question a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, it would have been a different answer. But Nathan Sobey is now being groomed by CJ Bruton, one of the greatest of all time, six-time NBL champion. Yeah. So it's the same thing. Who's sitting on the Melbourne United bench? Oh, that'd be Darryl McDonald. Oh, he was a pretty decent point guard, wasn't he? Do you think he's not the one that's grooming Mitch McCarron right now? I think what Mitch brings is underestimated because he does stuff across the board. There are games where he's not as dominant or as obvious a force as others where you can really see what he's doing. But I had this conversation on a different program with Sydney Kings historian Matt McQuaid talking about and also with Brad Rosen on our own podcast. Pad tie, actually, that was.
You may have been wearing pads when you were doing the podcast.
I don't know, but the point was the big question mark over Melbourne United was, would the Mitch McCarron-Shaley combination at point guard be good enough to get him there? Because, you know, well, you've got Bryce Cotton and Casper Ware and Scott Machado and blah, blah, blah. I'm thinking, yeah, they'll be fine. That'll be fine.
You haven't seen these late game losses as a bit of a condemnation of his ability to do it.
Well, it's his fault that they scored nine points in the last quarter.
Yeah, well, sort of. Yeah, I mean, Golding barely touched the ball in front of quarter court. He was jacking up garbage because he just wasn't seeing it when he wanted to. Landau was put in positions, you know, out on the free throw line extended, couldn't make that face up dribble move. You know, I didn't think guys got the ball where they wanted. Now that's not so whole and solely on McCarron. But I just felt like, I mean, you look at Casper Ware. Casper Ware, even with a depleted team, he makes sure the ball needs to go where it needs to go. And he milks out a lot of those wins for them. Does McCarron have that ability? I don't know.
I think he does. I do. I think he's a young man that's still a young enough man to be learning his trade. I think he should have been a point guard long ago, way back when he was playing for Cairns.
I agree with that.
Been playing him, and then they were too into, we got to bring in an American point guard, and they did. Geez, they've gone through a succession of great ones up in Cairns. If you think back to their two runs into grand finals, they had great point guards there. They had Scotty Wilbekin, who's been setting the world on fire in Europe for a long time now. They've done a great job with this. I understand their philosophy, but they had a potential great Aussie point guard sitting on their bench, and they erred in not. And they had Nathan Sobey up there too, I think.
Yeah.
The two guys that we're talking about. I mean, I know it was only supposed to be McCarron, but no, I think they can win a championship, absolutely, because I don't think in this modern era of basketball that your position is quite as important as it might have been a decade ago. I mean, look at the demise of the dominant big man. The thing, and we've got a different sort of big man. I really think it started here with Chris Anstey, where he wasn't just a seven-footer that was posting up. He was a seven-footer that was hitting threes on you. So you had to go out there. Now he could drive past, you know. So I think that's where the game is progressing. And so the actual importance of being a point guard, an off guard, a small forward, power forward, not as relevant.
One thing he
does is he plays defense.
Yeah, he does. He plays great defense. I don't. That is very true. But I just looked at that fourth quarter and I thought, gee, that they didn't know who the ball. They didn't know where they wanted to get the ball. Perth Wildcats.
You're taking one quarter in isolation.
I thought it was indicative of the season.
Oh, really? Well,
Aren't they in first place?
Barely.
The correct answer was yes, they are.
Yes, yeah, they are. That's true.
We've already discussed they have not had their full team once.
True, but I think even with their full team, we get into finals and the army that wins is the one that has the soldiers who ask the fewest questions. And with Perth, they don't ask questions. They know, get the ball to Bryce Cotton or I'm not getting a paycheck. Whereas Melbourne United, it's not like that. It's a little bit more up in the air. And when there's any doubt, if you've got doubt going into a close game with 30 seconds left, you're done. You're toast. Yeah. You're in the water. You're dead. And I worry about United in that respect a lot.
Yeah. Okay. They know two things in Perth. One, in a crisis, always get the ball to Bryce and never send personal emails to Kevin White.
That's the other thing I was going to say. Damian Martin has left. And you know that scene in The Simpsons where Homer Simpson gets the key to the executive bathroom? And it's real nice. It's got flowers and stuff like that. Damian Martin must have gone to Kevin White, Mitch Norton, and said, here's this key or key card or whatever. With this, you'll be able to manhandle players and foul them at every turn just like I did. I've spoken to the refs already. Don't worry. You've got that. Here's the executive key. Because that's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Okay. And now on the back of that, I'm doing another Homer Simpson, that meme where he just kind of quietly disappears into the hedge.
Fans in Perth don't like to know that. It's like, maybe Damian Martin got away with 3-4 times the contact you're allowed. But anyway,
I love Damian Martin, but there was one best defensive player award he should not have got. A couple of years ago, he got one out of when he was out injured most of the season or a lot of the season, and they still gave it to him. I thought,
another one you're talking about.
Okay, yeah, I thought that he should have been on the same amount as Darnell Mee. I thought they were complementary defensive players
historically given. Buddy, they're all the questions I've got for you. Have you got anything you want to canvas, talk about, promote?
Not really. Have you got any copies of Marvelous left?
I do. I've got 6 copies left, everyone. So
6 copies. Come on. 6 copies.
Once they're gone, they're gone. Brand new. $30 as well. Like if you wanted to buy a secondhand copy of this, you were looking at $60 plus postage. So it is a must to get. Brad and Body Podcast. Subscribe now. Look at the guests you've had. Lamanis most recently. That's out today. Beveridge, Joey Wright, Lindsay Gaze, Brian Gorgian, Vickerman. Yeah. I think that's everyone. So
that's everyone so far. But the format of our show was that it's half NBL, half WNBL. Obviously, without WNBL going at the moment, we were looking to fill it. And so we thought we'll go down the interview path. And that sort of worked out really well. The guests we've had on have been, fairly prepared to talk about all kinds of topics. So we've really enjoyed it.
Vickerman talking about COVID was interesting to me how bad that got and how fragile that was around that. It was really interesting. The other thing I want to say is we'll end on this. The Opal squad, the women's Olympic squad has been named. Have you seen that list? Do you like it? Any omissions that you're upset about or inclusions that you
like? I haven't seen the list, so I can't speak to it. I feel like I've let the listeners down badly. Okay, then.
Don't worry about them. Don't worry about them. They'll be fine. They didn't pay a dime for this. They didn't give it to me. Go to botinagy.com to read. I'm sure Buddy will have something out in the squad.
I will.
Yeah. All right, cool.
All right.
Thanks, Buddy.
It's been a pleasure.